All right. So I want to share with you an idea tonight that I heard a few weeks ago, and I was like, I'm going to totally write this down. And just to show you where I was at the time, I was at my desk in school listening to this like lecture, and I was like, all right, let me pull out my stationery. It's my only like scrap paper, and started taking notes down. But I thought it was an interesting idea by Erica Brown on this week's Parsha. So I don't know. I shared with her a couple of my own thoughts on what she said, and I think like it, somehow between the two of us, this is our thought for tonight. So the Parsha starts off with Yisro's arrival, and we know that when he comes, that it's like a big deal, and there is obviously a lot of ceremony involved in that, and Moshe is reunited with his family. So I want to try to take a look at Yisro, and avoiding, usually the focus when you talk about him is his suggestion for the legal system, and what he offered Moshe Rabbeinu is that you can't be the only leader, and you can't be the only judge. It's not sustainable. It's not going to work. The people will be wiped out. You'll be wiped out. Like, it's going to be a loss for everyone. I want to try to focus in on everything before that. So those are my 12 psukim that I want to learn together tonight. So we start off, Vayishma Yitro, Chohen Midyan, Chotein Moshe, Eikol Asher Asalu Kim Moshe, Lisael Amo, Ki Otzi Hashem Yisrael Mimitzrayim. Yitro hears, he's the Kohen Midyan, he's the father-in-law of Moshe. He hears everything that God did for Moshe and the Jewish people. Ki Otzi Hashem et Yisrael Mimitzrayim, because God had taken the Jews out of Egypt. So Rashi comments, Vayishma Yitro, Mashmu Hashem Ahuva. What did he hear that made him come? Kriyat Yamsuf Umilchemes Amalek. He hears about the splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. And I think that that's an important Rashi to put on the back burner for when we get a little further on to see what Rashi comments later. Okay, now I saw a beautiful vart by Rav Saratskin in Aznaim LaTorah that I think is worth repeating just because I think it is such an amazing insight into Moshe, although not totally on topic. So he says, how did Yisro hear? How did news get to Yisro? Right? So we don't know 100%, but I think it's the Ramban that says that Midian and Egypt were I guess you would say like they were allies enough that people traveled back and forth freely and news traveled freely from there, which is the reason why when Moshe runs away, he goes to Midian because he knows that it's a place where he'll be able to keep his ear to the ground and hear what's going on with the Jewish people. It's also why when he shows up there, they immediately identify him as an Egyptian because they had enough like interactions with him. So news traveled from Egypt to Midian. There's no question about it. That's how it gets there. So Milchemes Amalek was in the desert, and Midian's not far from there. So that's a good question. I would assume that's how it gets there. So Rav Saratskin says, you know, imagine that you are Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Like, think about the things that you've accomplished in the last year. You'd think that Moshe Rabbeinu would send a letter to his family saying, hey guys, just want to let you know, I did this. Right, send pictures, whatever we did. All these miracles, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was like instrumental in that. And yet, Rav Saratskin points out that Moshe Rabbeinu does not in any which way send that message to his family. So he says there's two possibilities as to why that is. First of all, I think that speaks to the great humility of Moshe Rabbeinu, is that Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not him, but it's we, not he. That's one possibility. But the other possibility is that Moshe Rabbeinu was so busy and so dedicated to the Jewish people that he does not have even a moment to take off to write this letter to his family. I thought both of those were very interesting like understandings of like the inner workings of Moshe's mind.
I think you can go with it. He had Yosef's bones with him and he didn't contact his father either.
Okay. Fair. Okay, so what happens next? So Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, takes Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, after she had been sent away. So Rashi says, what does mean achar shiluchah? K'shar amar lo kadosh baruch hu b'midyan leich shuv mitzrayim mekach Moshe tishtov v'banav. We know that when Moshe was sent back at the burning bush to go to go visit the Jews and take them out, so he takes his family with him. Yatzar only kratov v'kasho b'har Elokim. And Aaron comes to greet him on Har Elokim. Now, this is where the story goes blank. We don't know what happens afterwards, so the Mechilta fills it in. Amarlo, Aaron says to me, Heim halalu, who are these people? So Amarlo, zohi ishti shenasati minyan ve'elu banai. This is my wife, and these are my kids. So Amarlo, v'heichan atam olichan. And so Aaron says to him, where are you going with them? So Amarlo, mitzrayim. He says, I'm taking them to Egypt with me. So Amarlo, al rishonim anu mitzrayim. We already have so many people that are already stuck there that are suffering. V'ata balo sif aleihem. You're coming to add to that. Amarla, he says, it's Moshe, says to her, l'chi l'veit avich, go to your father's house, natlashne b'nei v'halchala. And so she returns with her children, which kind of makes sense because we know that they made it to the hotel and we know that they see Aaron. And then she's coming back, right, with Yisro. So we have to kind of fill in the blanks on that.
I mean, you can read it differently. I mean, I don't know if I have it literally, but he left with them. But by the time yes, Aaron Lacrosso, this is a Vishkashehu, not the Vishkashehem. They could have sent them back even before then.
Okay, but they were still made it to the hotel.
And then when it's down around.
That's right after that. Yeah, okay. I mean, either way. Yeah, she was like, if this is what the hotels are like on the way to Mitzrayim, I can't even imagine what's hiding in the closets there. I'm going home. Hey, right, it could be. I mean, again, this medrash is plausible because we have like a big gap to try to figure out, and it kind of makes sense. Fine. So what happens next? And her two sons that are and his two sons, well no, her two sons, Asher, which one of their names is Gershom. Because he said, I was a ger be'eretz nachriya. Right? Really, it's ger sham. I was a ger there, right? Which is where? Be'eretz nachriya, in a foreign land. And the second one's name was Eliezer, which was to say that what? The God of my father saved me, and I was saved from the sword of Paro. And Yisro comes. Again, there's a lot of Chosein Moshe over and over and over again. But he comes with the sons and the wife to Moshe. He comes back to Har Elokim. Now just, it's fascinating to go full circle, right? Which is a nice literary technique. But where did they meet Aaron? Rashi says, Vayifkeshehu, where? Well, actually, that's the Torah, it says that Bahar Elohim. They met up with Aaron at Sinai, and where does she come back? She comes back to Sinai, which is actually makes perfect sense because Moshe knew that where were they going to end up at some point? At Har Sinai. So if she knows that they're leaving Mitzrayim and she knows that they're going to have to go to Har Sinai because God makes that very clear, the desert is pretty big. Looking for them in the vast desert doesn't necessarily make as much sense as saying, I'm going to head to Har Elokim. They'll get to Har Elokim. And hopefully our timing is not terribly off. Yep, yep. They originally were saw you at Sinai the first time around, and then they came back. And that's true. But I'm saying when they departed from each other, it was like, saw you at Sinai. See you back there. Okay. Any other questions?
We already know the kids' names from when they were named.
Yeah, it's a good point. Do we know both of their names there?
That's a good question.
I feel like Gershom, we know Gershom was born, I'm pretty sure. I'm not.
I think, yeah, by the whole hotel thing, we got the whole.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. Did we get his name?
I think so.
Let's see. Okay, so Vatela Bemet right Krat Shemo Gershom Kemar Gerayti Beretz Nachria. We have that. Okay, then Har Sinai. No naming. The only place we might have it would be in Va'era when we get all the family, but. But there we don't. We only get Aaron's kids there. So that actually, yeah, Eliezer is new to the story. We did not have him before. Okay. Any other questions?
So, if they had gone back to if Zipporah and the boys had gone back to Egypt, would they have been staying with the Levium?
Yeah, that's true. So if they would have stayed with the Levium, they really would not have been suffering so much. But maybe still, the point is, like, why would you put your kids through that? Like, there's no purpose. Like, send them home, they'll stay, and it'll be okay. I guess the other question would be, what if they had come to Egypt? Would they have been different? Meaning, we always get the sense that there's something about Gershom and Eliezer that they're not, like, they just don't, like, Aaron's kids are always, we hear about them, Nadav and Avihu get themselves killed, it's big stuff, right? I don't know if that's what we should aspire for, but they certainly, like, make the headlines. And then Eleazar and Itamar, so Eleazar becomes the Kohen Gadol to replace his father, he goes out to war also.
We also don't hear much about Zipporah. I mean,
And
post this entire incident, she's not an influential person in the story of Bnei Israel afterwards.
Yeah, you almost.
You know, she comes up as the wife of
the Isha Kushit. I'm not even sure she has it. I'm not even sure she gets the name there, right?
But she's not an active participant, and that's also I would probably just describe that for her sons also.
Right, but I think that the point is that you somehow get the sense that, like, Zipporah is marginalized for sure, but, like, these kids, like, other than them being named, we don't really get much about them, which is a shame. But the Achar Shiluchaha thing, like, Shiluach is like divorce. You almost get the sense that really, when Moshe came to the Jewish people in Egypt, he did kind of give up his family then. Meaning, he might not have technically said goodbye to his wife where he wasn't living with her anymore, because maybe they did reunite a little bit, but on the heels of Sinai, like, that's going to be pretty much it anyway.
Didn't they give their wives like a conditional get because the divorce had limited?
Right.
He had no idea what he's getting into exactly.
Right, but he doesn't really like. Does he really divorce her, or he just like kind of like?
Maybe. What's that?
Yeah.
It says three times that Yisrael brought either Zipporah or Isis Moshe and the boys. Three times.
Hmm? All right. It says Vayikach and Pasuk Bet. Okay. Okay, so that's one.
That's two, and then the next pasuk.
Right. So I think Rashi points out, possibly on pasuk vav, that what's happening is that. Yisro says to Moshe, which almost seems like, to a certain extent, Moshe's not coming out quite so quickly. Like, if you don't want to come out for me, I get it. I'm only your father-in-law, okay? But then come out for your wife. And if you don't want to come out for your wife, at the very least, come out for your kids. But, it's a little weird. It seems like Moshe pulls out all the stops when he finally does come out. So it seems hard to believe that Moshe was, like, playing hard to get.
Can I just say this? For all of our avos, some of them have not been great parents.
True.
And he's
this is not a critique as much because he's a very unique situation, but as a father figure, he's really absentee.
Right. Meaning, I almost feel. I'm like a little nervous to say this because I feel like this is going to come out as like sacrilegious, but. Judaism does not believe in the idea of like, you know, the religious like leaders being celibate and like living a life to themselves. But Moshe is unique that way. Like with Moshe, I feel like there's the first 80 years of his life and then the last 40 years. He doesn't have a private life for the last 40 years, meaning from the moment that he comes to help the Jews leave Egypt, and certainly once they go into the desert, I feel like he is on 24/7, 7 days a week, for 40 years. I feel like he never gets a break. So for him, even though we would not set that as the gold standard of what we should be aspiring for, I think like from a practical standpoint, Moshe is unique that he can't be Moshe Rabbeinu if he's also going to try to be a parent and a husband. It's not really a fair thing, but I feel like Moshe does. He sacrifices his family and he sacrifices his wife, but that's why he becomes our Moshe. Like Moshe, we all have ownership.
I'm not disagreeing with you. It's rock and a hard place better than what you just said. You can't do it both. You can't be
right.
Moshe Rabbeinu if you're.
I mean, I feel bad for him. I really do, because I feel like he, in the end, like I don't think in his lifetime he necessarily felt the love that we have for him. You know, afterwards. Think like in the moment, which maybe is a little bit of what we're going to discuss in a little bit, but in the moment, Moshe spends most of his life not really being appreciated and certainly having to shoulder a lot with the people. Okay, so we are up to Pasuk Zayin. Vayetzei Moshe Likrat Chotno. Moshe comes out towards his father-in-law. Vayishtachu vayishaklo vayishalu ish l'reilu shalom vayavo ha'ohela. He kisses him. And they greet each other, and they come to the tent. It is interesting that Vayishaklo, it's not really clear who kissed who. Right? Meaning, who is the one that is all full of love and full of happiness? Meaning, we know that Moshe came out. Well, right, so that's everyone. Meaning, like, I greet you, you greet me. Right, and then vayavohu they come back to the tent, but vayishtachu vayishaklo, right? Is it that Moshe comes to greet towards his father-in-law, and Moshe bows and Moshe kisses him, or is it that Moshe comes towards his father-in-law and it is his father-in-law that bows and kisses him?
For the sentence structure, I mean, just the flow of it. If it was switching away from Moshe, it would probably say that.
Possibly.
Does that really need to be dissected?
No.
Okay.
Is that anything?
I don't think. Right. It's funny. I have a notebook. It's going to be an interesting question when we start packing up Sfarim. What's going to happen with this notebook? It's called Pearls of Wisdom. None of them are my own. But when I was, halfway through Shana Aleph, one of the Shana Gimel guys, so he was like our little Gadol Hador. He gave like a Musar Shmooz at least once a week. So he said to us, he goes, you know, like there's a Dvar Torah after davening every single morning. He goes, five different Rebbeim are going to share with you like 40 amazing Divrei Torah over the course of the year, and you're not going to remember any of it. And I was like, okay, Zok de Heilige Gadol Ador, this is what we have to do. So I took my marble notebook and I wrote these Divrei Torah down. The funny part is I've only, when we started the Chabura a long time ago, the first year or so, I like leaned so heavily on those and the audio cassettes that I had from these shiurim. But then like time came on and I was like, all right, you know, we could like, there's a lot of other stuff to find. But I remember that Rav Chagai Raviv, so he is one of the Rebbeim in Mevaseret, so he, who's Israeli, shockingly right with that name. So he had such an unbelievable vart on that question, on the ambiguity of these psukim, of who's who and what. And he had a great message. I don't remember what it was, but it was like... But yeah, it's what to look out for over Shabbos when I go, if I get to that notebook. But yeah, I don't think it matters who did it, but I think it is noteworthy that it's not clear who's happier to see who. Meaning, is it Moshe's like, oh, so good to see you, I missed you? Or is it like Yisro's like, oh my gosh, I miss you? It's not clear.
And why can't it be hard? Meaning they're both equally happy to see each other.
Right, so then the question is why it wouldn't be Vayishtachavu, Vayishak Lahem, I don't know, however you would write that. Right, meaning like, I guess Vayishak Ish L'Reyehu, right, each one does it to the other. So, I don't know, it's a good question, and again, it's one of those questions that you certainly don't have to lose sleep over. I don't have a powerful message to share from it, but it is still something to note. Pasuk Chet. Vayisaper Moshe l'chot no. Moshe tells his father-in-law, it kol asher asa Hashem l'faro l'mitzrayim al odot Yisrael. He tells him everything that Hashem did to Paro and to Mitzrayim. Al odot Yisrael, the happenings of the Jews. Eit kol atila'a asher mitza'atam baderech vayetzilem Hashem. And all the tla'ah, we'll get to that in a second, that happened to them along the way, and how God saved them. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says again, Vayisaper Moshe l'chotno, why does he tell him these stories? L'mshoch et libo l'karvo l'Torah. He wants to grip his heart and bring him close to the Torah, which is interesting because Vayishma Yitro, Yitro heard, right? And it's the most famous vart on Vayishma Yitro is he the only one that heard it? The whole, right? Everybody heard what was going on, right? And certainly you don't say the whole world heard it, right? If you don't want to say accept that Kriyas Yamsuf happened on some level in every person's home around the world. But certainly if the word got to Yitro, it means that the word also got to the rest of the people that are in his towns and neighboring areas, and yet he's the only one that comes. But Moshe repeats it to make him to make him want to come close to the Torah. And then Rashi says, "Et kol hatila'a shalayam v'shal amalek." Right, the things that happened on the Yam, Kriyas Yamsuf, and Milchemes Amalek. Sounds very familiar, because that is the Mechilta that we quoted above in Pasuk Aleph. But what does the word tla'a mean? It's not one of those common, like, Tanakh words that we're all comfortable and familiar with. So the Ibn Ezra translates it as following. Vata'am tzara she'yil'eh adam l'savla o lagida. So he says it's a trouble or a suffering that a person has to handle or manage. Lagida v'atam l'redifat mitzrayim. And what is that? It's the chasing of Mitzrayim by the sea. Ubiat Amalek v'rav hakal v'tzamo. So Ibn Ezra adds in, not only is it Kriyas Yamsuf and Amalek, but also the famine and the thirst. Umikulam hitzilam Hashem. And from all of these, God saved them. But the Ibn Ezra actually, I think, is saying more than what Rashi is saying. Because if you read Rashi and avoided the Ibn Ezra, how would you define Kriyas Yamsuf? When Rashi says Aliyam v'al Amalek, what would you think Moshe told them? What was the story that Moshe told Yisro?
Got
water the shore, Hashem split the water, we got through, he killed them, we got riches, it's great stuff.
Right. The Egyptians died. We came through. It worked out. And what would you say about Amalek?
We went to war. No one died.
Yeah. I held up my hands. It was amazing. Right? Nothing happened. That's how you would understand it. And that's how you would assume Rashi and Pasuk Aleph is talking about. What is it that made Yisro so impressed? He hears what Kriyas Yamsuf. Right now, it's interesting because Rashi does change it just a little bit. Rashi says in Aleph, Kriyat Yam Sufu Milchemet Amalek. And then Rashi in Chet says, Alayam Vishal Amalek. So it's not the war and it's not the splitting of the sea, but it's the sea. Ibn Ezra, though, says, no, what is it? Redifat Mitzrayim Bayam. The fact that Egypt chased them. His focus is we were like trapped at the sea. And then, Biat Amalek. Amalek comes and attacks us. And then just for good measure, he adds in the Rav and the Tzema, and the Tzema, the fact that we were starving and we were thirsty.
Well, I think, though, that Rashi's comment that the Torah is very important because Yisro originally coming, it could be the perspective of the former idol worshiper, or that perspective of the world. These are big miracles, and you heard about, like I said, the broad strokes. Sea split, Jews won, but when Moshe is talking to him, he's able to give him details that the average Joe on the street wouldn't know about. So therefore, if, according to Rashi, he's trying to give, maybe Moshe's trying to give him more of the inner details to understand how much is really from Hashem. And not only the big pictures, but all the small things. Oh, we were hungry, pulled a steak from the side of the wall, whatever you want to add
right
to it.
So, Steve, you're right, but the Ibn Ezra goes very far away from that. Meaning the Ibn Ezra, like, Rashi would be that, yeah, you could, again, depending on how midrashic you want to go into it, yeah, I mean, Kriyas Yamsuf as a miracle, the walls were like, the water was trapped in it, and there were taps of water, and there were fruit trees. Like, whatever you want, we can go with. And that's how he fills it in. I'm not sure if you have to say Rashi means that. I'm not sure. But one thing is for sure. You're not going to get that out of the Ibn Ezra.
Yeah, but I think Ibn Ezra, though, is also, he's adding, a different type of detail to this picture that again, broad strokes, Yisro already knew about. Ibn Ezra is adding a detail that's, very significant, that which you wouldn't necessarily understand if you just heard, oh, the sea split.
Right, but I think that everybody knew that not only did the sea split, but that the Egyptian army went down with this sea. But according to Ibn Ezra, he's not telling him there was Kriyas Yamsuf. He's saying, we were walking through the desert, it was a fine, beautiful day, and then like all of a sudden, the entire Egyptian army came like facing right down our throat. We're like, shoot, now what? And then like, according to Ibn Ezra, it could be that's how the story ends. Like, he doesn't say we're saved. You know that. But he's telling him, that was our Nekuda. And then, let's go on to Milchemes Amalek. What happened? We were fine. Everything was good. And then, boom, Amalek comes right and attacks us. And then, we thought we were still good, but then we had no food, and we had no water. I think that's what Ibn Ezra is saying.
Politician, chieftain, or like, he's interested in like how the Egyptians were going after them, and then how the people were behaving in the. This is what he has to deal with at home, probably to some degree. This is the kind of information he'd like to have.
Okay. Yeah.
I think he's going actually different. I think what Yisro saw was two major battles that the Israel came out victorious. I was just saying, well, no, there's this part of the story that's more important. It's not that we're victorious. Yes, we're victorious. And that's very sad. We got rid of the Mitzrayim. We got rid of Amalek. But that's what Yisrael heard. He heard about the two battles that they won. Not the nuances that Hashem had put together for it.
Right, but again, it seems like, at least according to the Ibn Ezra, and I'm going to like keep harping on the Ibn Ezra because I think the Ibn Ezra is like pinpointing that word that's key in the pasuk is tla'a, right? He's saying there's something in the word tla'a that we have to deal with. Meaning, what is Moshe saying? Moshe says to his father-in-law all the bad that happened to them. And yes, God saves us in the end. But the focus is on all the bad things that happened. And I think that that's a question we have to wonder. Meaning, why would Moshe focus on that of all things? Like,
is that what tla'a means?
I mean, we could... Not that this is going to be the definitive like answer. At least one English chumash. I totally get it. This is like half the size. So, let's see how Art Scroll translates it. All the travail. All right, I think that we could accept that the Ibn Ezra has like a pretty good translation that's consistent with Art Scroll. But now let's take a look at Pasuk. What do you mean? All the travail that had found them along the way. I would assume that it's talking about the Jews, because then the very next one is Vayatzilei Hashem, and like, God saved them.
Right. The thing that Ibn Ezra is saying, like, are all the bad parts of the story. Like, the chasing effort, they were saved, that was good, but the chasing effort was horrible. And then Amalek was coming, and that was horrible. Yeah,
and in the end, right. It's not that Moshe doesn't say we were saved. It's not like, we were chased by the Egyptians. Next, we were attacked by by Amalek. I think it's like he gets the punchline in that we were saved, but I think that the piece of each one that he like is hyper focused on is the bad part. And then Pasuk Tet. Now Pasuk Tet was always the pasuk that when I taught Yisro, I never liked the pasuk. But I think that Rashi's second explanation left me a little bit like upset. So Vayichad Yitro. Yitro was something. Al kol ha-tova asher asa Hashem l'Yisrael. Yitro had an emotion about all the good that happened to the Jews. Asher hitzilo mi'am Mitzrayim. That they were saved by Mitzrayim. What emotion would you assume that Yitro has?
Elation.
Right. He should be happy. So Rashi says, Vayismach Yitro. The first one, Zep Shuto. The Pasha Pshat is that he was happy. Umedrash Agada, and the Medrash says, Nasa Besaro Chidudin Chidudin, that his flesh got like goosebumps, right? He got upset. Meitzer al Ibud Mitzrayim. He was sad about the destruction of Egypt. Hainu de Amri Inchi Giora Adasara Dare Lo Tevazi Ramabiape. And that's why we say in a convert, until 10 generations, you should not make fun of their lineage to their face. Why? Because in the back, there's always like, but I still am, and I'm still connected. And by making fun of those people, what you're doing is, you're making them feel bad, but you're going to give them like heartache about what happened to their descendants. I don't know. Somehow the thought that Yisro was like cut up, which is really what chidudin, is a little bit hard for me to really believe. But okay, so he's happy. Let's go with that. He's happy. Al kol ha-tova, on all the good. Tovat ha-man va-be'er v'ha-torah. What is it that he gets excited about? All the good that happened, which is the man. The Be'er and the Torah.
Why would you assume he should be happy? I mean, yes, he's got his kid, his, you know, Moshe's okay, I guess, his son, but happy about
it? Well, I think that, like, from the pasuk, right? What emotion would he be upset about all the good that happened? Okay, so let's take a look. I mean, the only mephorish we're going to have access to here is going to be Unklis, because we already saw Rashi. So let's see. Vayichad Yitro. Vachadi Yitro. There was a happiness. I think so. Okay. So I don't know. I guess whatever. We could leave that as a question we would need more books for.
The fact that it says Al-Kola Tova, it's already... It would be... He was impressed with all the miraculous things that happened, but because it's on the good things, you know what I'm saying, like the pairing, it's got to be happy with good.
Right, I think right. Rashi's second opinion is the more difficult one to like match up with the pasuk. So, but I think that Al Kol HaTova, that Rashi is a really good one, because Rashi points out, what does he get excited about? Tovat Haman, Va'be'er V'atorah. It's the man, the Be'er and the Torah. Val Kulan Asher Yitzlo Mi'Amitzrayim, and that God saves the Jews. Okay, now.
Isn't that everything?
What everything?
That's the list of everything that's good. I mean, it's just part of the...
Well, those are some of the things, meaning in the desert, the good things that happen are the man, the be'er, and the Torah. Now, interestingly, if you take this Rashi and you pair it up with the Ibn Ezra, Tla'a, right, the last two and Rashi's first two here do complement each other. So, Vayomer Yitro. Yitro says, Baruch Hashem asher hitzil etcha mi'ad Mitzrayim u'mi'ad paro asher hitzil et ha'am mitachat yad Mitzrayim. Right? Thank God that saved you from the hand of Egypt and paro, that saved the nation from Egypt. Ataya dati ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elokim. Now, I know that God is the greatest of all the gods, ki badavar asher zadu aleihem, because of what God did. I think it's Rashi that says that what most impresses Yitro is the divine retribution, that God looks and says, Paro, you did this, I'm giving you something that is commensurate with what you have done to them. Yisro brings korbanos to God, and they eat. Okay. So, Erica Brown offers the following. She says that Moshe Rabbeinu had been for a whole year, and then some, doing one miracle after another, after another, after another. And during that whole year, you know what he never had a chance to do? He never had a chance to tell his story. He never had a chance to share with anybody what was going on. And she says that what it is that Yisro is doing for Moshe by listening and being an audience is for the very first time he is giving Moshe a chance to recount his story. And not only that, he throws a party. He celebrates. And this is what she says. She says that the goal is that you need to give people the ability to see the celebration and what happened, despite any setbacks that were involved. And then she quotes Peggy Noonan, who writes for the Wall Street Journal, who wrote some articles apparently over the last year called I'm Proud of Us for so many of the things that we did, right? Like we focus on all the bad, and yet like we're proud because look what we pulled off despite all this. But I actually think, and this is what I responded to her afterwards, I said, I think it's a little bit more. I said, I think if you look at the psukim carefully, it's not just that he gives Moshe a voice to finally talk about all the good things and he celebrates it. But I think he also gives Moshe perspective. See, because when it's all done, what does Moshe say? Moshe says, Yisro, let me tell you what happened. Ekol ha-tla'a. because Moshe's living through all of this. Sometimes when you live through all of this, what do you see? What is it that's most impactful to us? We see all the negative. Comes along Yisro and says, no, I don't see the negative. I see Kol HaTova. I see all the good. And that's why I thought it's fascinating that Moshe and Yisro both talk about the same events. Vayishma Yitro. Yitro comes. Why does he come? He comes because of Kriyas Yamsuf and the Milchemes Amalek. And what does Moshe tell him? Moshe tells him about Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek. But I think the difference is that Yisro comes and says, oh my God, look what he did, Kriyas Yamsuf Milchemes Amalek. And Moshe says, Milchemes Amalek, Kriyas Yamsuf, look what it was. We were at the edge, the brink of extinction, and God saved us. And then again, we were at the same place, and God saved us. And then I think Yisro comes and turns it on its head and says, no, Moshe, come on. Look at all the great things. Look at the goodness that comes out of it. And I think that's what he tries to do. He tries to spin it, Al Kol HaTova. Rather than focusing Moshe on all the bad things, you have to focus on all the good things. I thought it was an interesting idea, but I would actually just end with a story. It's a story I probably shared before, but I think it's worth repeating. Right? There once was someone who came and was talking to I don't remember which gadol it was, but said, my kids understand what's a big deal. Like, they're having such a hard time with everything. And he said to him, part of the problem is that when you talk to your kids, you say, oh, it's so hard to be a Jew, you have this. Oh, it's so hard to be a Jew, you have that. We have this suffering, they want to kill us, this one wanted to do us in. We have these constraints and these mitzvos that tie us down. And he says that what ends up happening is all your kid hears is, oi, to be a Jew. You hear, oi, to be a Jew, too many times. You start saying to yourself, why would I want to do this? So he says that the opposite is like what you have to do. You have to explain to them, no, look what an opportunity it is. Look how incredible it is. Look at what this provides us. And I think that's sort of the rubric that Moshe and Yisro are dealing with. They're looking at exactly the same event. And Moshe says, look, it was so hard. But in the end, Vayatzilei Hashem. And Yisro says the opposite. He says, Al Kol HaTova, look at all the good that happened. And that's all a byproduct of God saving you. It's the ability to look at two events and to be able to see it from different perspectives. Now, I'm not criticizing Moshe on this. I think that more often it is easier to fix a problem looking at it from a distance. And it's easier to see the positive looking at it from a distance than when you're in the midst of it, right? We all now have all our stories of inspiration from the last 11 and a half months of our life, 11 months of our life, right? But in March, April, May, June, we were all saying, oi. Now it's easy, oh, look at this. This was so lofty and that was so lofty. I think that Yisro has the benefit of not being in the thick of things. But I think that he's giving a message to Moshe that Moshe has to try to find a more positive note and tone to see in what happens.